Thank you. Today I'm going to be talking about my dissertation research on rootstocks and fertilizer selection in apple orchards in Virginia. And what I'm really focusing on are nitrogen-based fertilizers. So why nitrogen fertilizers? Well, nitrogen fertilizers are the most frequently applied nutrients in orchard systems. And this can be problematic for two reasons. In an orchard system, if you're over-applying nitrogen, you can increase your vegetative growth, which can result in a reduction in fruit yield and quality, and you also increase disease susceptibility, so your instances of fire blight may increase. And there's also some environmental impacts that can be problematic. As you're applying nitrogen, this nitrogen that's not being used by the trees can run off into groundwater systems. Additionally, producing conventional nitrogen fertilizers is really energetically expensive, so they have a huge carbon footprint. So what are some ways that we can apply nitrogen more sustainably in orchard systems? Well, our typical methods are to apply nitrogen by fertigation, which is adding nitrogen to your drip line, or to apply nitrogen more frequently, so do split applications of nitrogen during the growing season. However, there are some other methods that we may want to consider, which includes the use of carbon-based fertilizers such as compost amendments. And although these amendments are lower in nitrogen, they allow nitrogen to be mineralized throughout the growing season and become plant available. They also have some other really great things that they can do to improve soil structure and soil quality, like improving water holding capacity, increasing cation exchange capacity, and also increasing microbial activity, function, and diversity. So the objectives of my research are to develop more efficient fertilizer practices for high-density apple orchards in Virginia, determine how different nitrogen fertilizers affect apple tree growth and nutrient status, also how nitrogen fertilizers impact the diversity of the apple tree root microbiome, and understand how rootstock choices influence soil microbial communities. So in 2013, we constructed this pot-in-pot system, and we decided to construct a pot-in-pot system because soil doesn't change very quickly, and Greg wanted me to graduate within a decade, so we thought we should probably put some native soil into pots and plant some trees and try and change the soil more rapidly. So we planted 5 different rootstocks, B9, M9, G41, G214, and G935. I selected these rootstocks because they were either really well used in Virginia already, or growers were really interested in planting them in their fields. Additionally, different rootstocks have different genotypes, and these genotypes may influence the exudates that the rootstocks produce, which could then influence what microbes are in the rhizosphere, and that can have some implications for plant health and plant growth. I also have 6 fertilizer treatments, a non-fertilized control. I fertigated with calcium nitrate. I used chicken litter compost and chicken litter compost with calcium nitrate fertigation, and that chicken litter was sourced locally, the chicken litter compost. I also have a yard waste compost and a yard waste compost plus calcium nitrate fertigation, that was also sourced locally. And all of these treatments are applied at 40 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and this is a completely randomized factorial design, so each of my treatment combinations has been replicated 4 times. So we have several response variables of interest I'll discuss really briefly. We looked at tree growth, we are looking at leaf mineral content, and we're also looking at some soil responses such as soil mineral content, cation exchange capacity, organic matter, and things of that nature. I'm really interested in the soil microbial populations and how they're changing with these rootstock and fertilizer applications. So we looked at microbial respiration rate, which is a measure of the microbial activity in the soil. We're looking at nitrogen mineralization, which is how much nitrogen are these microbes making available to the plant. And I'm looking at the microbial community structure and diversity. And right now we're measuring that using something called TRFLP analysis, and this is a fingerprinting analysis. So we can't tell you a species or exactly what they're doing, but we can tell you if changes are happening, and that's still very important. So I'm going to jump right in and start talking a little bit about my data. This is my plant growth data, which is measured as trunk cross-sectional area. And I started measuring this in 2013 when we planted the trees. We didn't see any differences at planting. We also didn't see any planting or differences in 2014. I measured this in the winter, so in February I had people out there measuring trunk cross-sectional area with me. We didn't see any differences in February of 2014. In 2015, however, we did see that yard waste plus calcium nitrate fertigation and chicken litter all increased trunk cross-sectional area compared to the control of no fertilizer application. For a little information about the leaf nutrient analysis that I did, I'm going to go over some of the macronutrients, but there's also an increase in boron, magnesium, and calcium in the chicken litter plus calcium nitrate and yard waste applications. But I'm just going to discuss nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium today. So we didn't see any difference in leaf nitrogen concentration in our treatments or in our rootstocks. So our treatments are this top graph, our rootstocks are the bottom graph. I wasn't really surprised to see no significant differences in our rootstock treatments just because they all had similar nitrogen use efficiency. But we did see some interesting changes in the phosphorus concentration in our rootstock treatments and our fertilizer treatments. So in our rootstocks, you can see that G41 and G214 both contained more phosphorus than B9 and M9. Additionally, you can see that the trees that received chicken litter and yard waste had the highest phosphorus concentrations. And that's not really that surprising because our composts were high in phosphorus. In 2014, our potassium concentration showed a similar trend. So yard waste treated trees had more of a concentration of potassium than the control trees, the calcium nitrate treated trees. We also saw an increase in potassium in rootstock G41, G214, and G935 over bud 9. So to talk a little bit about our microbial analyses, this is potentially mineralized nitrogen, and this is how much nitrogen the microbes are mineralizing from the treatment soil. And nitrogen mineralization is notoriously low in high clay soils. But here we see that chicken litter and also yard waste microbes were able to mineralize the greatest amount of nitrogen. Just a little bit about our soil data. So soil organic matter, which is really important to plant health, and soil structure. We definitely saw large increases in soil organic matter when we applied these compost treatments. You can see from the yard waste treatment and the chicken litter treatments, as well as the yard waste plus fertigation and the chicken litter plus fertigation treatments in both 2014. And this trend was also apparent in 2013. We also saw an increase in the cation exchange capacity in both 2013 and 2014 when we applied compost. So the plants seem to are getting different nutrients and more nutrients from the compost, and we also have this increase in cation exchange capacity, so the soil is able to hold more nutrients. And for our microbial activity, again, microbial respiration was influenced by the compost treatments in 2013. So you can see that yard waste significantly increased microbial respiration compared to our other treatments. And that's probably because it was so high in organic matter. There was a lot of carbon for the microbes to utilize. So there's a lot of respiration happening. In 2014, we did see an overall increase in microbial respiration compared to 2013. And again, yard waste and also chicken litter had the highest microbial respiration. And again, this is probably because there's so much more carbon available in these treatments for microbes to utilize. So talk a little bit about our community analysis. So this is our fungal community analysis, and fungi are very important in the soil for helping plants get nutrients or as potential plant pathogens. And while we didn't see any trends based on fertilizer treatment, we definitely saw time scale trends, which I expected to see. But we also saw some slight trends in how rootstock influenced these communities. So communities seem to be more similar. Like over here, you can see in G41, the circles, the communities were more similar here based on rootstock than treatment. And you can see this trend with, you know, G41, with G214, and a few other rootstocks, but not with fertilizer. The same kind of trend is apparent in our bacterial community analysis from 2013 to 2014. You can see that there's no real strong apparent fertilizer effect. However, there are rootstock effects that are occurring, and time is really overwhelming any effects that we would see with, you know, rootstock or fertilizer that may come out as a strong statistically significant effect. But you can see that M9 over here is clustering, and again G214. So in summary, compost treatments seem to be increasing trunk cross-sectional area compared to a control of no fertilizer. We're also seeing an increase in leaf nutrient status when we apply compost, which isn't that surprising because compost have phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, things that you don't get from your conventional calcium nitrate fertilizer. You're also seeing an increase in soil organic matter and microbial activity in these treated pots. And the rootstocks also are showing some variability in their nutrient either uptake or use efficiency. For our future work, we're really interested in doing a metagenomic analysis of the rhizosphere bacterial communities, which I'm currently working on. So that way we can have a better idea, not just are there changes and shifts happening when we apply these fertilizers or when we look at these rootstocks, but who's there and what are they doing, which are really the big applied questions. We want to know, you know, are there beneficial bacteria that are coming along with some of these treatments? I'd like to acknowledge my committee, of course, but the PEC lab at the Winchester AREC. Without them, I'd still be shoveling gravel into a pit. I'm very grateful to have them. And now I'd like to take any questions. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for a question or two.
Yes.
Do you ever consider looking at controlled release fertilizers?
The question is, have we considered looking at controlled-release fertilizers? We haven't really considered looking at controlled-release fertilizers because they're not really used too frequently in apple orchard systems. As far as I know, no one's using like an Osmocote fertilizer or anything like that. Yes?
How about mycorrhizal application?
The question is, are we interested or looking at mycorrhizal application? Do you mean, are we looking at applying mycorrhizae directly to the roots? I am not looking at that currently. However, mycorrhizae are incredibly important to NPK and water uptake, so I think that's very important.
I have two questions. First is on the differential between the rootstocks. I assume they all came from the same nursery, but did they all come from the same rootstock nursery?
Yes. Gennaro can answer that. Yeah, they were provided by Gennaro at the USDA Cornell Geneva.
And then the second one is translating the amount of organic materials you put in. How would that have worked out in tons per acre? Any idea?
I'm not sure what it would have been in tons per acre. I would have to look at my field notebook to give you a better answer for that, but I know it's, when I apply it, it's usually less than a centimeter over my plots for the fertilizer, for the compost applications. So I'm applying them at 40 kilograms or 40 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So it's not really that much.
Okay, 40 kilos per hectare.
Yeah, okay. 40 kilos. Yeah, 40 kilos per hectare. So it's of nitrogen. So it's not actually that much compost, and I have my compost tested every year, so I can calculate.
I'm actually surprised you got that much release, because usually in commercial orchards, the biggest problem with compost materials is it doesn't release very fast.
Well, I think that's also, you know, part of the pot and pot system. You know, we're making these changes really rapidly. Okay. I also have a more applied portion of my dissertation where we're looking at these composts on M26 that have been grafted with Red Delicious. So I could see how that that data may be slightly different from this data. Additionally, with potentially mineralized nitrogen, you know, when you do that assay, you're doing it at a temperature that's optimal for nitrogen mineralization. So that also makes a difference. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ed.